Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world, and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, everyone. You are listening to Green Left Radio, and your presenters today are myself, Jacob, and
me, Chloe. Good morning.
So, good morning, everyone. Now, before I go announce, because this is going to be quite a special program today. It is going to be part of the International Day of People with Disability, which is actually held on the 3rd of December each year. The International Day of Disability is a United Nations observed day aimed at increasing public awareness, understanding and acceptance of people with disabilities. Now, before I go into what we have lined up for our program today, which is part of Grounding Disability Justice, which is the special 3CR 12-hour broadcast that will be airing to you from the broadcast from 3CR. So if you look on the 3CR website, you can see a full grid of what's coming up. Now, before I'd like to acknowledge that 3CR and Green Left Radio is being broadcast to you from the Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation. We like to acknowledge that this always was, always will be Aboriginal land, and that sovereignty has never been ceded. Now, to give a bit of an introduction to, I guess, the program, as I noted before. Green Left Radio and 3CR is participating in the International Day of People with Disability, and so the special kind of theme for this kind of that 3CR has called this broadcast is Grounding Disability Justice. And for Green Left Radio's kind of contribution to this, we have a number of guests kind of lined up for our program. We have an interview with Ali Scott, who is part of the Disability Resources Centre, and about the campaign around public transport for all, which is campaigning for better accessibility and public transport. And one of the kind of main themes that we are going to be exploring in this program is unveiling and critiquing the privatised nature and corporatisation of the NDIS. Now, since the introduction of the NDIS, there have been kind of improvements, but there's kind of still plenty of work to do on a basic access, accountability and meeting the needs of the disability community. So, a special interview that we're going to be doing is, which relates to this, is we're going to be doing an interview with Graham Matthews, who is a participant in the NDIS. He is also the Social Science spokesperson for disability rights, and is also a very frequent commentator on NDIS and economic matters for Green Left. So yeah, we're going to be very happy to interview him, and we'll be interviewing him starting at 7:30 a.m. For our program. Now, I guess before we can get into some of the guests we have a program, because maybe I'll get Chloe to kind of start off a bit of a discussion, maybe covering some of the recent kind of news that relates to issues of disability and so on. So, yeah, I'll pass it on to Chloe.
Oh, thanks, Jacob. Maybe we'll just start off this very special segment with a few news articles. And we were thinking of maybe drawing your attention to an article in the ABC by Emma Myers, and it's called Disability Advocates Worried Religious Discrimination Bill Will Lead to More Discrimination in Australia, Not Less. And it features Fiona Strahan from Disability Voices Tasmania, and she speaks about her experiences, about the fact that people with disability often experience ridicule, offensive assumptions, bias and intimidation, and it doesn't matter whether this arises from hate, prejudice, misguided assumptions and attitudes towards disability, or one person's interpretation of religious belief. And this bill it was tabled in Parliament last Thursday by Prime Minister Scott Morrison, and it is the third version of a law promised by the coalition government during the same sex marriage debate. And yeah, I guess, you know, we should, you know, actually remember where this bill first of all came from. It, you know, didn't arise from some kind of oppression, like trying to combat Islamophobia, which is a real problem here. This is a religious bigotry bill, and it came off as part of the backlash against the marriage equality campaign by Scott Morrison, who really sold this, both major parties sold this false narrative of silent homophobic majority to push their agendas. But it was really a reactionary minority within government who were just, you know, who are legislating for religious protection laws that actually give more power and more rights to religious institutions so they can discriminate against people based on sexuality and also people on disabilities. So, you know, disability advocates are right to worry about the religious discrimination bill, or, you know, the religious bigotry bill. It will lead to more discrimination in Australia. And even the name of the bill, it's misleading. You know, it, in the United States, it's called the Religious Freedom Bill. It just sounds like something good, but it's not. And it does, it can override some of the existing legal protections that were fought for in the Disability Discrimination Act in 1992, which could mean people with disabilities who are, you know, discriminated against will have to fight it out in federal court if they want to challenge subjective statements of religious beliefs. This would be very expensive and time-consuming. For example, it would override a Tasmanian law that provides protection against offensive conduct on the basis of protected attributes like sex, race, disability, or sexuality. And one of the biggest proportion of complaints under the section of the Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Act being targeted by the federal bill is from people with disability. You know, it's a real worry. You know, an employer at a school, a hospital, aged care provider that is a faith-based employer, based on their religious belief, they could probably discriminate against employees with disabilities. You know, in the name of religion, someone could probably go up to a person with disability, say this person is in a wheelchair. Someone could advise them that if they pray, they might be able to walk again, or they may consider their disability to be a punishment from God, which is very insulting and degrading to anyone living with disability. And it is discrimination. And, you know, it can supposedly be dished out in the name of God. I guess I should add, strangely, if a person who is in a wheelchair happens to be someone of faith, it can be just as horrible for them to hear that abuse, because not all people of faith or religious people go around insulting people. But the religious discrimination bill allows for those who would. So this bill really does put freedom of religion ahead of freedom from discrimination. Yeah. Did you have anything to maybe add, Jacob?
Well, I think to kind of add to that kind of point is, I mean, just to kind of make it kind of clear, I mean, really, for the kind of Morrison kind of government, and in terms of the kind of intention of this bill, because I think, you know, our kind of position is, you know, we think everyone should have the freedom to be able to express their religious beliefs, regardless. But one of the things that the Morrison government is kind of pushing on this, and this has been a feature of the religious right, it's not necessarily about religion. It's in a sense, basically, them wanting to kind of justify bigotry and discrimination in the name of religion. So I think I think that's kind of probably an important kind of distinction to make, because, yeah, we don't, it's not that being religious is inherently makes you discriminatory. It's in the, when it's in the hands of, you know, political leaders who are clearly wanting to use religion to justify kind of discrimination, and then use the cover of religion to protect. Because essentially, you know, Morrison kind of report was sort of talking about, you know, we have to deal with the issues of cancel culture, so to speak.
Yeah, it is a bill that really divides people. There's a person in that article named Liam York that does point out he's a gender diverse queer man from Newcastle, and he does think this bill passing will be frightening, and he puts it quite well, I thought. He said that the rollback of communities, it is a rollback of the communities that we work so hard for, and, you know, he thinks that those freedoms that are proposed in this bill already exist. So, you know, people are allowed to have these views and talk about them. They don't really need to be on a public platform where it's going to make people feel unsafe to be themselves and be out in the community.
All right. So I might just, I was thinking that maybe one other news story I thought we would just kind of point out before we play our first interview for the program, as part of our special Grounding Disability Justice program. I just wanted to go point people's attention to, I guess, another news story. And while this is not necessarily completely kind of relevant to Victoria, since this is affecting states outside Victoria, this is actually the issue of accessibility of buildings is actually an ongoing issue for people of disabilities. And there's a bit of a news story that came up a few weeks ago, and this was kind of printed in The Guardian. And essentially, accessible housing, disabled people are left behind by a shameful building code stance in New South Wales, WA and SA, South Australia. So essentially, there's people with disabilities are being left behind in three major states after governments have failed to make minimum accessibility standards mandatory for new houses. And this is what's being quoted by disability advocates. New South Wales, Western Australia and South Australia say they will opt out of clauses in the forthcoming revised National Construction Code that will require all new buildings to have basic accessibility features, such as at least one step-free entrance, a tall on the entry level, and reinforced walls in the bathroom. And I think, you know, taking this kind of more broadly, this is actually just, you know, the fact that the majority of the majority of buildings, especially old kind of buildings, are not made at all with kind of accessibility in mind for people with disabilities, I think is just a kind of shameful kind of example of kind of like the ableism that kind of exists in everyday society and under capitalism. And essentially, you know, there's these features and others such as walk-in shower recesses and wider door frames and corridors to facilitate ease of movement were added to the NCC earlier this year after a push from advocates highlighting the difficulties people with disabilities have in finding homes that meet their basic needs. And of course, the clauses mandate that all new homes adhere to a silver level accessibility standards as described by Livable Housing Australia, which advocates say make houses more livable for people with and without disabilities. And now the good thing is probably the other states have actually, so I think I presume that includes Victoria, have kind of agreed to implement these new standards as part of their building legislation. But New South Wales, WA and SA, South Australia have elected to kind of opt out. So I think, yeah, that's just, I think, just a bit of a rant. But I mean, the positive news is, given that our program's in Victoria, that, you know, at least within Victoria, there is some level of commitment to these kind of building standards.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is true, but I just on a personal note, recently my mum was looking for a home to rent, and my grandma who lives with her, she can walk perfectly well and everything. I mean, she wouldn't be considered someone who has a disability, but, you know, she is getting older and it can be taxing to walk up and downstairs every time she needs to use the bathroom or access her bedroom. And my mum really struggled to find, you know, affordable and accessible home to rent here in Victoria. We found that there are so many of these new townhouses built for investment purposes. Lots of them are vacant, actually. Mm. And they can typically be cheaper to rent, but if it's like not in a city, but they're double story and hardly any of them have, we found they didn't have bathrooms or toilets downstairs or bedrooms on the ground floor. And the banister is purposely like missing in one of the sections of the staircase, which can be really dangerous. So even though here in Victoria, we've not opted out of these clauses that are meant to protect people with disabilities, it's a good example how under capitalism homes are not really being built for human need. They're being built for profit. So, you know, there's no drive to make houses more livable for people. And I think it's just on a final note, I think it's pretty bad that the New South Wales Minister for Innovation and Better Regulation, Kevin Anderson, he defended the lack of support for inclusion of the minimum accessibility standards, saying the changes would have negative impacts on the housing affordability and that the construction sector will also come at a significant cost to the community. That's a ridiculous thing to say, because that's not the reason housing is so unaffordable for ordinary people. It's not because we're implementing these standards that are necessary. It's because of things like wage growth, remaining stagnant, the rising levels of inequality, developers and landlords working together, and privatizing these publicly owned land, and making sure that housing is not a basic right for all, which is but only for those who can actually afford it and willing to get, willing to do the renovations, which can be really expensive if you're someone who has a disability and has to spend all that money on renovating a new house. It can really, it can break the bank, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Chloe. And I think we might just go move on to playing a quick announcement, and then we'll play our first interview for the program, which I pre-recorded yesterday. And I'll give a bit of introduction to it after this announcement. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM on 3cr.org.au.
Have you heard of long COVID? If you or someone you know have had COVID-19, you may still experience symptoms weeks or months later. There are many symptoms of long COVID, but the most frequent are extreme tiredness, shortness of breath, and muscle aches and joint pains. Anyone can experience long COVID, including children. You can find information in your language on the Health Translations website, healthtranslations.vic.gov.au. Just type long COVID as a keyword.
A 3CR supporter.
We jail black males in Australia nationally at a rate five times greater than apartheid South Africa jailed black males in 1993. The suicide and self-harm rates are the highest in the world, and the life expectancy gap is the biggest in the first world. You know, Australians don't like hearing the truth about how bad things are, but the more we resolve from it, the longer this is going to continue.
Black fella, white fella, it doesn't matter what you colour.
Mainstream media is not interested in this stuff. It doesn't find space to talk truthfully and deeply about issues that affect all Australians. The only place, predominantly, you will find that with any real depth is on community radio, and 3CR has been one of the great leaders in that. So if people are wondering where they should spend their hard-earned cash, I would suggest 3CR is a bloody good place to start.
What your name is, we got the hair. Lots of changes, we need more brothers.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and as part of our special Grounding Disability Justice program, we're going to be playing an interview with Ali Scott, which I recorded yesterday. Ali Scott is the campaign coordinator for the Disability Resources Centre, and I recorded this interview to have a bit of a chat with her about the Public Transport for All campaign, which is about improving the accessibility of public transport and so on. So, yeah, very important issue in terms of disability justice. So I'll play the interview now. You're listening to Green Left Radio. You are listening to Green Left Radio. As part of our program on Grounding Disability Justice, we are very happy to be interviewing Ali Scott. Ali is the campaign coordinator for the Disability Resources Centre. The DRC is a Melbourne-based advocacy and campaigning organisation run by and for people with disabilities. A public transport that everyone can use has been something that DRC have been lobbying for over 40 years now. So, yeah, we look forward to having a discussion with Ali. You're listening to Green Left Radio. So, asking the first question,
Accessibility issues has always been, from my perspective, an observed issue in our public transport system. For example, where I live in Brunswick, there's hardly any accessible tram platforms, and most of the time, accessibility stops once you get past the CBD. What can you tell us about some of the challenges that people with disabilities face when it comes to accessing our current public transport system?
Sure. We all know that public transport was devised around this idea that you could hop on and hop off. But today, our needs as a community are so diverse, and what we have is no longer suitable. You will know that a few months ago, the Victorian Auditor General produced a very thorough report into the accessibility of the Melbourne tram network. And they concluded that the tram system was only 15% accessible, 15%. And if you think that accessibility here represents when a low floor tram meets a level access stop. Now, that is a very, very low rate of being able to board a tram. And really, disability is not just about wheelchair users. It's also the needs of people who have other mobility issues. They might have energy management conditions, people with sensory disabilities, many of our elders, people with mental health issues who need to feel safe. All of these people need a reliable, affordable transport, public transport system. And it is really failing a great number of our Victorians at the moment. And it's estimated that 1 in 2 Victorians will need accessible public transport at some point in their life. There's a huge swathe of demographic for whom using public transport at all is just not viable. And of course, for these people, cabs are scarce and expensive. So for instance, if you live in the regions, we know that people sometimes have to book cabs up to 2 weeks in advance to make sure they can get one. And here, for instance, we have one of our team members who lives in North Melbourne, probably not far from Brunswick, and travels into the CBD. When she does that, even taking out the cab subsidy, she is out of pocket by $90 a day. So cabs are not an alternative. So what this means is that people aren't travelling at all.
And I guess, thanks for that, Ali. And the next question is, the Disability Resources Centre has done a lot of ongoing work on this issue. What can you tell us about some of the solutions that you think could be implemented to improve accessibility for our public transport system?
Thank you. So in 2002, so that's nearly 20 years ago, the Disability Standard set out what is meant by accessibility. It basically outlined how transport providers needed to change what they were offering in order for it to meet the needs of everyone. So that includes a whole range of things, from having accessible carriage on every train service to having a ramp at a level at which people can traverse it without assistance. So bear in mind, this is about, the important thing here is independent travel, being able to travel without somebody to support or assist. The idea laid out in the standards was that the government would complete all of this work by the end of 2022. So we would have an infrastructure that was 100% accessible. That has just not been done. It has not been a priority for our government. As you've heard, the tram system is 15% accessible. So for successive governments, this thing has just swept under the carpet. And now we're a few months away from this deadline. And what we're saying is, please, let's make this a priority right now. So we want the government to prioritise this over other systemic work, especially as the patronage for public transport is so low right now and is expected to be low because of COVID for the next 18 months. So it's an ideal time in which to do that work.
All right. And that's a good response. And I guess, what can you tell us about your Public Transport for All campaign? And I guess, what can you tell us about your strategy to achieve change? And I guess, what are some of the demands that you're putting to the state government?
Okay. So the Transport for All campaign is gathering other organisations and individual campaigners together who all want to make it very clear that we must draw a line in the sand, that we must start progressing these infrastructure changes. We must start rebuilding the network so that everybody can use our trams, our trains and our buses. There's also a big need, as I've said before, our elders to be able to travel to trams and buses. So there's a huge need, and we're building a cross-sector coalition that we would love everybody to join so that we can finally make this government pledge the sums that we need to see the infrastructure changes. So if you relate to this at all, you may not be somebody who has mobility issues or the need to feel safe on public transport. You may be someone who's cared for someone who does, or whose parent is at that point where they're feeling uncomfortable using public transport. Please, please, please join with us. Go to drc.org.au and find the campaigns page and sign up to join with us, and we'll let you know, because in next year, we're going to start the early part of next year, we'll be revving up for a huge campaign to try and bring an end to segregated public transport, because all we want for Christmas is to be able to get to where we want to get to and engage in the community as much as everybody else.
All right. Well, the next question I was kind of going to ask, had you kind of answered, I guess, already. And I guess maybe I wanted to kind of hear, do you have any final comments that you'd kind of like to make? Because you've given a good overview of the campaign and, I guess, how people get involved. So any final comments you'd like to make?
Okay, let me just think for a moment, something we haven't said. I think the thing that is so often hard to understand is just how crucial public transport is, what a significant role it plays in all of our ability to engage fully in life and everything it has to offer. And over the last 2 years, we've all experienced lockdown. We've all experienced what it's like to only be able to walk from your doorstep and not be able to go further than that. And I think this is really a campaign that I think so many people could empathise with in a way that we never could before. And so I think that's one reason why I feel really hopeful that we can all join together and move forward into a more optimistic and fully inclusive era of transport, which, of course, is incredibly important for environmental reasons as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ali, and I'd like to wish you, in fact, we will actively try to support and give as much profile to your campaign as much as possible on our kind of program. And, yeah, we wish you all the best in terms of, you know, this campaign. I definitely think this is an ongoing kind of issue with public transport, and it's always striking, you know, we have these new accessible trams, but most of the platforms aren't even accessible in most of the parts of Melbourne. As I kind of referred in my last comment, you know, it seems to me that accessibility ends as soon as you leave the CBD. So thank you very much, Ali.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for having me, and you're absolutely right.
Get your radical summer attire sorted. New stock of 3CR Radical Radio tees has just landed, featuring the iconic antenna design by artist Emily Floyd. As well as our basic black, we have a range of great pastel and primary colours in a variety of sizes. And for those radical little people, we have a short run of kids tees available too. For just $30 for adults or $20 for kids, you can get yourself a local, ethically manufactured and printed tee that supports Radical Community Radio. We can send one out in the post, and there's click and collect from our studios at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy. Or if you're fully vaxxed, you can drop in and browse our t-shirt rack during business hours. To purchase online, go to 3cr.org.au/shop.
get your copy of 3CR's magnificent book.
It's a stunning history of the people, programs and issues at the station since 1976.
On sale now for the amazing price of just $20.
Pick one up at the station or jump online and place your order.
Radical Radio, celebrating 40 years of 3CR.
On sale now for $20.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and we just had an interview with Ali Scott, and now we're going to be moving on to our next main interview for the program with Graham Matthews. Now, Graham Matthews is a participant in the NDIS, and he is also the Socialist Alliance spokesperson for disability rights, and is also a very frequent commentator on the NDIS and economic matters for Green Left. So, good morning, Graham.
Good morning, Jacob. How are you?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. So, I was going to pass it on to Chloe to kind of ask kind of like the first question to kind of start off our kind of discussion.
Hi, Graham. Chloe here. Thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure, Chloe.
So, Graham, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, the NDIS, which was first launched in 2013, promised that it would support a better life for hundreds of thousands of people with a significant and permanent disability and their families and carers. And it was delivered with the promise of peace of mind for every Australian and anyone who has or might acquire a disability. Graham, do you think that the NDIS has lived up to that promise to support the needs of people with disabilities, their families and carers since its launch back in 2013?
It's a very good question. The aims and the objectives of NDIS are quite laudable. They're very commendable in many senses in terms of, as you say, trying to give peace of mind to any person, at least an Australian citizen, who has or may acquire a disability that they'll be supported throughout their life. Now, NDIS was launched in 2013, as you say. Largely, a number of trials were launched in the Hunter and Newcastle and so forth. Even as far back as that, the cracks in the system began to emerge, particularly in terms of the complete deregulation of pricing for NDIS. So really trying to, even at that very early stage, place a cap on the expenditure required from the government, by this Liberal government, for NDIS, and really try to clamp down on the cost of providing people with disability. It was launched, it's been something of a staggered launch, depending on the state you're in. In New South Wales, it was launched in 2016, certainly for new participants, which is how I encountered NDIS. I am a sepsis survivor. Just over 5 years ago, I contracted double pneumonia, which led to sepsis and then septic shock. I spent 3 weeks in a coma, woke up and went through a number of amputation operations. So I've lost my legs and my fingers. And that's not an entirely uncommon situation. Now, I suppose one of the big difficulties with NDIS is its intense secrecy. Every participant's plan is secret, in as much as it's not published anywhere online. Even general trends, or indeed benchmarks, and that's a term that NDIS like to use. Or a general idea of how much each participant is actually receiving, depending on their situation. And that secrecy creates all kinds of difficulties for each participant as they try to negotiate quite individually with NDIS, and can lead to a number of significant problems. It's also worth pointing out that the estimate is that there are approximately 4 million people in Australia who are living with disability. On this International Day for People with Disability, that's something to really reflect on. That's almost one in six of the Australian resident population are living with disability. Yet the number of people who are covered by NDIS is barely a tenth of that, at around about 400,000. And having known that, this is not a figure. It's not like the numbers of people with disability have somehow climbed unsustainably over the last 2 or 3 years. The numbers of people with disability have remained fairly stable for a number of years now. So it's extremely unsupportable, I suppose, of the government to claim that all of a sudden they've realised, or they claim they've realised, that NDIS is unsustainable, and that in fact people like myself, who are really quite profoundly disabled, are using NDIS, certainly as the Minister for NDIS chooses to try to claim at the moment, as a welfare source, and that this needs to be clamped down on. This kind of appeal to the basest element of the LNP supporters needs to be strongly resisted, not only by people with disability and their supporters, but anybody who stands up for a just society. So to try to draw together those threads and answer your question, NDIS was definitely an improvement. It's definitely a positive step. However, it's an incomplete and insufficient step, and something which needs radical reform to really bring to life the expectations that it created among people with disability when it was launched in 2013.
Yeah, so that kind of goes into kind of, guess, the next question, Graham. I guess the one kind of critique, a frequent kind of critique of the NDIS, is that it had essentially kind of privatised and corporatised what is considered an essential service for servicing the needs of people with disabilities. And I guess, can you guess unpack that? I guess, in especially you referenced the Liberal government as well, especially in the context of, you know, how have different governments over the years since 2013 have supported and not supported the NDIS?
So it's pretty much, I'm not exactly sure in which month NDIS was launched in 2013, but as I said, it was very much launched as a trial back then, with rollout really only beginning for most new participants in 2016, and then even later for existing participants transitioning from existing state-based systems. Excuse me. There have been, it is worth pointing out that many people who live with disability have found that NDIS has opened up a new chapter of their lives, which in many cases they could never have hoped to have achieved. NDIS has, by a focus on individual assessment and providing for the needs of the individual, it has, in some cases at least, provided for additional funding or additional support for people with disability to be able to live their lives as freely as possible. That being said, as you say, NDIS is predicated on a privatised, for-profit system. So it's a government subsidy to private providers, most of whom are business-oriented, so in the sense that they are for-profit, to provide for the needs of persons with disability. Now, at the extreme end of that, we've seen, and certainly the mainstream media loves to tell us about the number of rorts that have occurred from NDIS providers, where unscrupulous providers have manipulated or indeed defrauded NDIS participants. You know, we have stories of luxury cars and gold bars and so forth being bought with NDIS funds. That's a very small proportion of where the NDIS funds are going. Nevertheless, a large proportion are going to some enormous businesses, that particularly those that run personal care organisations, again, private businesses, but and that you know, provide that they may well provide some level of service for NDIS participants, but in many cases, the driving force is really maximising the return for shareholders. And really, the funding of people with a disability, the purpose of that should be to support the needs of people with disability and not to maximise the profits of large corporations. Now, the Socialist Alliance, of which I'm a member, advocates, certainly we understand the gains that are being made by NDIS, but we advocate that private for-profit companies should not receive government funding for NDIS. Nevertheless, that should go to community-based organisations, whether it be, you know, charitable organisations or other community-based organisations that serve the needs of people with disability. There were gains. Now, I can't speak from experience because, you know, ironically, I was very lucky in the sense that when I acquired my disability, NDIS was there, so I was the participant before I left hospital in 2017. Nevertheless, those who were living with disability prior to that say that the state-based system was very limited and quite inflexible in the support that it would actually garner and guarantee for people with disability. And certainly from quite bitter experience of the underfunded and often exceedingly bureaucratic state-based health system in which I spent 10 months 5 years ago, I can say that an alternative of simply returning the entire process to that very bureaucratised governmental health system is no alternative at all. What we need is a genuine disability-based NDIS based on the community, run by people with disability and actually serving their needs rather than being driven to maximise profit or indeed reduce cost for the government.
Thanks, Graham. You have sort of touched on the next question I was going to ask, but I wanted to mention the fact that, you know, we know there are millions of people with disability who are from a non-English speaking background and many underuse disability services. I mean, I imagine there'd be translators to help. The question was, what are some of the areas and solutions that could provide NDIS in actually serving people's needs?
I think if we look at it holistically and from a bird's eye view, the biggest issue with NDIS and indeed government funding of so much funding to support people in their daily lives is that it's rationed. The government doles it out with a teaspoon from a very large pool of money that the government collects from taxes from you and I and from corporations and through other means and so forth. But the government doles out support for people with disability, whether it's the disability support pension, whether it's the dole, or indeed NDIS with an eyedropper or with a teaspoon. At the same time, they give massive massive subsidies to gas companies to wreck our environment and you know, destroy the possibilities of a transition, of a just transition to a renewable future. So the government will argue that, and it certainly will argue very strenuously in the run-up to the next federal election next year, that NDIS is completely unsupportable, that it is outstripped its expectations of cost and so forth, and needs to be severely reined back. Now, that's essentially code for these people don't vote for the LNP. We get no votes out of this, so we're going to smash the amount of funding the government provides to NDIS and show our big business and LNP base that that we're tough. We're tough economic managers, and we can make the decisions to really to cut funding to cut this massive budget deficit where necessary. Now, without touching on the issue of whether a budget deficit in and of itself is such a bad thing, certainly people who are eligible for NDIS, or indeed people with a disability more broadly, are some of the most disadvantaged in the society. As you point out, Chloe, many people with who live with a disability are from a non-English-speaking background, and the NDIS system itself is intensely bureaucratic. Albeit that there may be translators provided and so forth, it's nevertheless it's an enormous hill for people who have to climb, in many cases either on their own or just with the support of their immediate family. There are charitable organisations which help, but they are generally underfunded, and in many cases people may not know that they actually exist. The broader perspective from a socialist point of view is that funding on for things like disability support, indeed support for people in all kinds of areas, should not be capped, should not be restricted. It should be open and based on need. And Socialist Alliance also believes in moving away from what we call a medicalised model of NDIS, where you need to have, you know, a doctor or indeed a specialist saying, yes, you are disabled because of X, Y, Z, A, B, C, and rather basing it on a self-needs assessment. Now, some may say, oh, that means that people will simply claim things they don't need. Well, let me tell you, I rely very heavily on my carers, personal care, in order to get to, for instance, doctor's appointments or to exercise or indeed to make me lunch of an afternoon and so forth. Now, when I was able-bodied, the thought would never have crossed my mind to have some random person hang around my house and help me with things that I was more than able to do myself. So I think this argument that people will claim funds from the government purse that they don't need unless it's strictly rationed and restricted is simply a furphy and is in fact quite disingenuous and deeply offensive, I think, to those with disability.
And I guess I want to kind of take, because we've had a very good kind of discussion about the NDIS, and I guess I want to kind of take some of this into, I guess, a broader discussion beyond NDIS, and I guess I want to hear some of your kind of comments, I guess, on some of the contemporary issues that are affecting people with disabilities today, like, for example, you know, the impacts of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic that we're kind of all currently kind of living through, but of course everyone is experiencing it kind of differently. So, yeah, I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of perspective on some of those issues.
Certainly. There is an argument which I support that disability is essentially a social construct. So it's not, in that sense, a medical issue. It's not an issue with one's physical problems or indeed one's social or cognitive problems. It's a social issue. It's attempting, it's people who need to struggle to be to find their place in society, not for any fault of their own, but through the barriers that society puts up. Now, if persons with disability live with that that difficulty throughout their lives, the COVID pandemic has certainly multiplied that many times. We talk about lockdown, and certainly there's been a lot of quite angry protests around issues surrounding lockdown, both in Melbourne but also in Sydney over the last year in particular, and we're seeing it internationally. Excuse me, and people saying they just want to get government out of their lives and just be able to get on with their lives, et cetera, et cetera. Well, multiply that sense of concern and that sense of being sort of shut out for persons with disability, because it's in many cases people with disability also suffer from some form of immunosuppression. They're far more susceptible, should they contract COVID-19, to getting an extremely bad case of it and suffering quite significantly, and even it causing death. And certainly in Europe and elsewhere, a disproportionate number of those who've died from COVID-19 have been people living with disability. So, but fundamentally, the impact on people with disability from COVID has been to shut us in even further. In many cases, we live our entire lives relatively shut in, confined to the house, or in some cases, even just our room. And COVID-19 has made that even more difficult, I think, for many people living with disability. And I'd just like to offer my sincere and deepest solidarity to everybody who is living with disability on this International Day of People with Disability.
Thanks, Graham. Graham, and also listeners might remember the case of a six-year-old child who was born here in Australia who is ineligible to access funding under the National Disability Insurance Scheme. There was an article written about it in Green Left by Janet Parker titled "Disdain for Disability Added to the List of Crimes Against Refugees." And this little boy named Kayan has cerebral palsy, and the government is denying him and his parents permanent residency. They're trying to deport them because they think he's a burden on the community. And, you know, now his family have been forced to spend more than $40,000 on legal and immigration fees. And, you know, there are at least 15 families every year who face deportation because of a relative's disability, you know, because of our racist migration laws, which are exempt from the Disability Discrimination Act of 1992. I just wanted to, you know, bring that up. But Graham, as a Socialist Alliance spokesperson for disability rights, what's your perspective on how capitalism fails to support the needs of people with disabilities? I mean, how would a socialist society serve the interests as an alternative?
It's a very good question. Look, and I'm deeply concerned about the situation of Kayan, of course, all people with disability, particularly those who are threatened with deportation. And it really it does show the extreme nastiness. There's no evidence that, for instance, the Labor Party would take any different attitude to a refugee with disability and would similarly try to hunt them out of the country on the basis of the burden that they placed on the Australian economy, and just how absolutely outrageous that position is. As I said earlier, from a socialist point of view, the biggest issue with disability funding is the fact that it's rationed. And we understand, in Socialist Alliance, we understand that this is an exceedingly wealthy country. It's a wealthy country which has been made wealthy through exploitation, both of Indigenous and First Nations people within Australia, but more broadly by the exploitation of poorer countries, both in the region and internationally. It's a wealth that's been built on other people's labour, sweat, labour and disadvantage. And it's important that we actually give that back, not in the sense of stripping everything that is good about this society from the society, but certainly providing a generosity of spirit to provide for people in need. And certainly there is no evidence that this society will somehow tip over, will somehow collapse, if it starts to adequately fund issues like people suffering with disability, unemployment, you know, frail age, whatever the particular issue may be. So, as I said, from a socialist point of view, certainly in terms of NDIS, we believe that NDIS was a step forward. However, we would recast NDIS as being something which is controlled by people with disability. We would replace the current board with people elected by people with disability. We would change the basis of the funding to move away from this medicalised gatekeeper model to one which is self-assessed, and make it very much, rather than having to humiliate oneself and argue in front of a planner or indeed a local area coordinator every 12 months to 2 years about how, even though things are going okay, there's still all these things that one can't do, and moving away from that basis of continual humiliation to one where the support that people with disability and their families need to have a reasonable life is simply there for the asking, rather than having to be demanded and campaigned for, to be refused by NDIS bureaucrats and to have to go to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal to get justice, as a situation I'm in myself, we would nevertheless have NDIS or indeed funding for people with disability to support people with disability as a right, not a privilege.
All right. Well, we're getting probably to the end of our interview, I guess. And I guess, Graham, do you have, I guess, any kind of final comments you'd like to kind of end on for this?
I guess it's worthwhile noting the government attempted to bring in independent assessments. That was its key to, it argued, to cutting the out-of-control spending on NDIS. After a huge backlash from disability advocacy organisations and even from the state governments around the country, it backed away from that. Unfortunately, it becomes quite apparent, certainly from, as I mentioned earlier, being a participant in NDIS can be an extremely alienating and very isolating experience. But social media at least partly cuts through that. And certainly from social media, from a number of the amputee groups that I'm on, it appears apparent that NDIS is, in fact, as one might say, acting out. So the government has not actually changed the legislation. The government has not actually changed regulation applying to NDIS, and yet NDIS is seeking to smash and severely cut the funded support that people with NDIS, participants are receiving in the run-up to the federal election, in order to parade itself as a good economic manager. Now, it's important, I think, that both people with with disability and their supporters, and their people who simply support a fair society in this country, be aware of this fact and demand from their local federal member that the government continue to pay reasonable supports to people with NDIS. I think it's important people are aware of this issue because this will be a big issue, certainly for those with disability, in the run-up to the federal election, and frankly, not let the bastards get away with it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Graham. I think this was definitely a very informative interview, and I think, yeah, it was definitely a great kind of discussion to have for our special program on the for International Day of People with Disability. Thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you so much, Graham.
Oh, my pleasure, Chloe and Jacob. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Okay, so we were just having an interview with Graham Matthews, who is a participant in the NDIS and also the Socialist Alliance spokesperson for disability rights. And so we had just a good sort of substantial kind of discussion on the nature of the NDIS, and then also talking about, you know, what are the kind of alternatives, what are the solutions to improving kind of NDIS? Because, yeah, one of the kind of themes of our program this week is we were attempting to kind of unravel and critique the kind of privatised nature and corporatisation of the NDIS. But of course, as sort of Graham kind of acknowledges, NDIS, since the introduction of the NDIS, there have been improvements for people with disabilities, but of course there's still plenty of work to be done and plenty of things to be fighting for in terms of the NDIS. So, yeah. Okay, so I'll just go play a quick announcement. You are listening to Green Left Radio.
William Salmon. What? I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same. You could never understand. Feel the fortune flowing. You know it isn't stuck.
Tune in to Grounding Disability Justice, 3CR's International Day of People with Disability broadcast. On 3rd of December, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m, we're making space to explore what disability justice has been and will be on these lands, with programming led by Black and Indigenous community members, in addition to programs by disabled broadcasters from the 3CR community. Visit 3cr.org.au/Disability Day 2021.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio. And as part of the International Day of People with Disability, I thought we'd play a bit of a song featuring people with disabilities called, I was going to play Welcome to Four Wheel City by Four Wheel City, which is, I think, a hip-hop group based in the United States. All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Yo. Tired, man. Get this car to start. Yeah. Four Wheel City. Alright, let's roll. Let's go. Drop the helicopters over us. They watching. They don't want us to be a part of their city, man. They pull all these steps, man. All these curves you can't get over good, though. All these inaccessible stores.
Four Wheel City.
Resilient. They don't want us here.
Four Wheel City.
What we gonna do? We gonna make our own place.
Four Wheel City.
Welcome to Four Wheel City.
The Christopher Reeves, but I got something on my chest that's been bothering me. What's the problem be when I'm out in the streets? It's like I can't go nowhere. What's wrong with me? How come when I go to the store, I gotta call first to see if this wheelchair accessible? How come they treat me like a vegetable?
Huh?
Like I ain't here,
but I'm here,
and I can say I don't care. But the truth is, I can't walk up the stairs, so I need a ramp and the elevator too. And while you're at it, bring a accessible bathroom. Man, when you want the same thing, if it happened to you, hey,
welcome to
Four Wheel City.
Where you from?
Four Wheel City.
Here
glad to have y'all. Four Wheel City. It's the move I'm here to come for. Movement.
Welcome to
Four Wheel City.
Where you
let you roll it like we
from?
Four Wheel City.
Here
we making it like we making
Four
it.
Four Wheel City.
Survive.
It's the move.
Survive.
Something that be popping my nerves. I hate when day walkers be blocking the curb with their cars like they stars. I watch and observe, like, excuse me, sir, can I cross the street? Can't you see I'm in the chair? Cause I can't move my feet. Why you blocking the curb? Why I can't get by? It's because you're standing up and I'm paralyzed. Am I less than you? Are you more than me?
Tell me.
If I didn't speak up, would you have noticed me? It's your switch, don't run the funds themselves. We search, we see what happens when his back and his feet hurt. This is a deep verse, and that discrimination, she's played out. Yeah, we got limitations, but don't count us out. And if you feel the what I'm saying, let me hear you shout.
Let me
Four Wheel City.
Four Wheel City.
Way
it's a way out, baby.
Accessible stores, that ain't right. Buses with no lifts in them,
somebody to check in.
You're listening to Green Left Radio, and you're listening to a kind of a special program on grounding disability justice, which is part of the 12-hour kind of broadcast that 3CR is presenting in relation to the International Day of People with Disability, which is held on the 3rd of December, which is of which this is this month, and which is a United Nations observed day aimed at increasing public awareness, understanding and acceptance of people with disabilities. Now, as part of that program, we're going to play a bit of a pre-recorded interview that was actually done on from the Thursday Breakfast program on April 22nd this year. It is a pre-recorded interview with the Disability Justice Network. Now, the Disability Justice Network is a grassroots kind of collective which has which got recently formed this year, and it has actually basically created a national kind of mutual aid to provide support to marginalized disabled people. And this interview is an interview with Julia Back, and I'll probably who is a queer Takatupu writer based in Nam, and then she joined the Thursday program, the Thursday Breakfast program, to speak about the Disability Justice Network. So, hope listeners enjoy.
Julia Back is a queer Takatupu writer from Borloo, so-called Perth, and is now based in Nam. Today, Julia joins us to speak about the Disability Justice Network. Welcome, Julia. Thanks for joining us on 3CR Thursday Morning Breakfast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, the Disability Justice Network has recently launched. Can you tell us a little bit more about the network?
So it's brand new. We've had so far one kind of official meeting with a few of us, maybe 15 or so people, and over the last week, more and more people have been joining, which is amazing, and it's becoming this really incredible collective of people with really diverse experiences, and I love that. It seems just so powerful already, and it kind of just, it came out of what we felt was an absence in so-called Australia of an organisation that's specifically focused on disability justice as opposed to disability rights. And we found that a lot of the resources that we were getting and a lot of the content about disability justice was coming out of Turtle Island. And so we kind of collectively were like almost waiting for a disability justice organisation to show up in so-called Australia, and then at some point through various conversations that a few of us had, we were like, why not us initiating this? And that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah, I love that. So what are you hoping to achieve as a collective? What are some of the main issues that people are already raising?
I guess, we haven't necessarily discussed specific aims or goals or, very specific things that we want to achieve at this stage. And I would say more broadly, what we all have in common is this desire for justice for disabled people, and in particularly multiply marginalised disabled people, which many people in the collective, if not most people in the collective, are. And so I think overall what we're hoping to achieve is this sense of community and this sense of support and care that we can give and ask from each other, and how, you know, we can support the wider community. And I guess a lot of us are coming from abolitionist frameworks, so we're also thinking about ways in which we can replace or, you know, substitute or act alongside various systems and, you know, government or non-for-profit organisations, and how we can support people who might not be able to access those or who might choose not to. So, you know, a big thing for us is mutual aid. And another thing that we're thinking about is organising a disability justice training that we can deliver to members of the community who might not be too familiar with disability justice and the history of it, in addition to maybe some organisations who could benefit from a more, you know, justice-focused understanding of the needs and the rights of disabled people, as opposed to, you know, a more reformist approach.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. And back to the mutual aid, I know that the network has started a mutual aid fund. So can you talk a bit about what mutual aid means to the Disability Justice Network, and also what you're currently fundraising for?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure mutual aid as a concept means many different things to the different people in the collective. But to me, I would say it's, you know, it's a process that's rooted in abolition and anti-authoritarianism and moving away from this individualistic culture to one where we're supporting each other and, you know, relying on each other and asking for help from each other and giving help to each other, as opposed to relying on either, you know, government organisations or systems or, like, healthcare more broadly, you know, like hospitals and such. And I guess the other important thing to note is that mutual aid, you know, like, it's not charity and it's not based in kind of like this dynamic where, you know, one person is giving and one person is taking and there's power there and there's like a power imbalance, I think, a lot of the time with like the charity model of providing care. And in contrast, mutual aid is about us supporting each other on kind of a level playing ground and making sure people have what they need. And, you know, people who are able to provide those things doing so, and us all kind of moving away from, depending on systems and structures that don't seem to care about us or aren't necessarily designed for us, or that, you know, people don't want to engage with for various reasons. And the mutual aid fundraiser that we started initially, it was started to raise money for an Aboriginal person in the community who required very urgent medical care. And then we figured, why not just keep it going? There was, you know, another young person who we saw on Twitter was asking for money for to afford their medication, and we were like, you know, this person also needs help, let's give them some of this money too. And we've now raised I think almost $5,000 in like 5 days, and yeah, all of that money we can, it's so incredible. All of that money we can now distribute to various mutual aid requests that people have, like people's people's GoFundMes or, you know, people asking for money with various things on social media. And we have this, currently this, like, backlog of money that we can use to support our community. And that's basically it. Like, it's just this way that we can show and demonstrate, you know, collective care within the disabled community and you know, the wider community.
And I do really like that it's also a national mutual aid fund. And, yeah, listeners, if you want to go to GoFundMe, just type in Disability Justice Network Mutual Aid Fund. And, yeah, the fundraiser is currently sitting at $4,925 and the aim is for $10,000. So, yeah, definitely chip in if you can. And how can people keep up to date with the Disability Justice Network?
Because we're brand new, we're still kind of working out, you know, what we want our guiding principles to be. And with that, we're trying to figure out a way in which we can represent ourselves online and engage in social media that is really intentional but also really sustainable for us. So I think it's going to be probably in the next meeting that we discuss that, and then after that I reckon we'll likely be on Instagram, just because it's a pretty accessible network for a lot of people, and posting updates through there, and probably on Twitter as well. But yeah, for now we don't have a whole heap of social media, and you'll likely find out about new initiatives in the meantime just kind of through individual members of the collective sharing within their various networks and communities. But definitely stay tuned, because we will make sure that it is something that can be easily accessed. We just need to work out some of the kinks and figure out a way that we can do it that makes sense to us, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for now, listeners, definitely just go and check out that GoFundMe, because I'm sure that the network will post updates on the GoFundMe fundraiser as well. Thank you so much, Julia, for joining us this morning to speak about the Disability Justice Network.
No worries at all. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You are listening to Green Left Radio, and we're just listening to an interview with Julia Buck from the Disability Justice Network. And that was an interview that was recorded on in April this year. And just to give a bit of a plug, the Disability Justice Network is still active, and they're still maintaining their mutual aid fund. And you can go to it. If you search the Disability Justice Network, GoFundMe, or you should be able to find it. But yeah, it's definitely, and you can even search Disability Justice Network on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure they have a Facebook group as well. So I thought maybe just for the next part of the program, we'd play a bit of some songs featuring people with disabilities. And I was going to play the song Rights, Not Charity, which is the Karen Cheddar Band. And in fact, I actually really like the title of that song. It's actually quite relevant to some of the discussion we've actually been having about NDIS and et cetera. So, yeah, I'll go play the song for the next 1 minute and 22 minutes. 22 seconds.
Are you ready, thief? Let's go! Yeah, rattle your tin to make money for me. And every November you're on the TV, having fun while your voice loses sincerity, while you're pleasing with the viewers moving generously. But we want rights, not charity. We want rights, not charity. Rights, not charity, cause charity keeps you where you think I should be. We got rid of girls with calipers and holes in their head. Now if you give a pound, you get badges instead. We'll take your golden hearts and just go up to bed, cause we need your little badges like a hole in the head. Cause we want rights, not charity. We want rights, not charity. Rights, not charity, cause charity makes me what you think I should be.
We raise lots of cash for hopeless cases. We're very genuine in what we do.
You get your kicks performing in a charity band, singing Beatles songs, you feel you're lending a hand, and your condescending concerts are in constant demand, and all it proves to me is that you don't understand.
We want rights, not charity. We want rights, not charity. Rights, 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 not charity. So take it sort of charitably.
Right, just wait a minute.
Are you ready, thief? Let's go!
You rattle your tin to make money for me. And every November you're on the TV, having fun while your voice loses sincerity, while you're bleeding with the viewers doing it generously.
But we want rights, not charity. Rights, 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 not charity. Cos charity keeps you where you think I should be.
We got rid of girls with calipers and holes in their head. Now if you give a pound you get badges instead. We'll take your golden hearts and just go on to bed. Cos we need your little badges like a hole in the head.
Cos we want rights, not charity. We want rights, not charity. Cos charity makes me what you think I should be.
We raise lots of cash for hopeless cases. We're very genuine in what we do.
You get your kicks performing in a charity band, singing Beatles songs, you feel you're lending a hand, and your condescending concerts are in constant demand, and all it proves to me is that you don't understand.
We want rights, not charity. We want rights, not charity. Rights, 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 not charity. So take it sort of charitably.
Alright, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and that we were just listening to Rights Not Charity by the Karen Cheddar Band. We sort of just had made a bit of a mistake and accidentally played it twice, but apologies for that, listeners. I hope you enjoyed it anyway. And we're getting kind of to the last kind of 7 minutes of the program, so we thought we would use the kind of opportunity to kind of make a bit of a kind of a few announcements. I think Chloe wanted to give a bit of a plug to this short kind of documentary film that I think you can actually watch on ABC. So maybe we'll pass on to Chloe.
Oh, I think it's not on ABC iView anymore, but I can direct listeners to how to get to it. I just wanted to plug this really good film. It's called Leaving Allen Street, and it was created by Katrina Channels, who is also part of Green Left, and Bridget O'Shea. And Leaving Allen Street is a feature-length documentary, and it follows 30 adults living with intellectual disabilities, and it documents their experience as they move out of an institution and into public housing after years of living this institutionalized life. And it shows how they move out and discover what it feels like to be free and have choice and independence. And even though these institutions had provided high levels of support, it also prevented meaningful connections with the outside world. So it really revealed how our basic freedoms, such as, just going outside to a shop or walking through a park, visiting friends and family, these basic freedoms are denied to people in institutions like the Oakley Centre, which was the place that they were in. And there was this proposal to build new homes in the community and move people out into their own new homes, but this was taking over a decade. Most of these institutions, by the way, have been knocked down and replaced with community housing. I would recommend people watch this film. It highlights how important it is that every individual be granted the same basic human rights, no matter who you are. It was released in the cinema in January this year, and it was on ABC iView, but now you can rent the documentary on Vimeo, on OCC, on occonnections.org, but we'll put a link on the 3CR Breakfast podcast page so people can access it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Chloe. And I think we're going to kind of announce what's coming up for the rest of the broadcast that 3CR is going to be broadcasting as part of their 12-hour broadcast for the Special International Day of Disability program, which the theme that 3CR is going with is grounding disability justice. Now, but before that, I would like to just do a bit of a quick sort of Green Left kind of activist calendar, and I will only just announce a few
few sort of events. Won't cover everything in the Green Left Access calendar, but I want to note that there is actually going to be a rally today at 1 p.m. Outside the State Library, and it's basically a rally called by Indigenous activists around stopping black deaths in custody. There's actually been a number of recent deaths in custody, and so these protests has been called in response to that. And then on Saturday, 12 p.m. there's going to be the second Stop the Far Right protest by Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, which is a bit of a left-wing mobilisation in response to this right-wing anti-vaccination freedom movement, which has elements of the far right involved. So that's going to be an important rally at 12 p.m. at the 8-hour monument on Saturday. And then at 3 p.m. I think it's at the State Library. At 3 p.m. at the State Library, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a rally organised by the Sudanese community in solidarity with Sudan. So that's going to be happening at 3 p.m. And, yeah, I think that's...
Maybe just advertise the Friday vigil for Human Rights Day for refugee rights, which is going to be Friday the 10th of December at 6:30 p.m. outside the Park Hotel, where around 38 or maybe even 40 refugees remain detained, held as hostages. So it'll be a somber event, but yeah, I recommend people get down there and hear from refugees who have been released, but also from the refugees who are still trapped inside Park Hotel.
All right.
And so that's organized by Refugee Action Collective along with other refugee-led organizations as well.
Yeah. So I'll just get to spend the last bit of the program just advertising what we have coming up. Maybe, Chloe, you have the... Do you have the sing coming
up? Yeah, we've got Earth Matters coming up.
No, we don't.
Oh,
do we? Isn't 8:30 to 9:20 a.m. we have the Manifesto for Rest and...
Oh, sorry. Sorry, the Manifesto for Rest and Survival. And this is a Sick Form, Black Yarn, Crisp Space, Deep Place. Eleanor explores disability justice and its meaning when grounded in Indigenous ways of knowing, a decolonial approach to disability, and the collective networks of rest, care and resistance that underpin it. Also featuring Tabitha Lean and music by E. Fishpool and Alice Sky.
Yeah. And then from 9:20 to 9:45 a.m. there's going to be Growing Up Jan in Australia, which is... the program description is Spend Some Time with Jane Rosengrave, Yotta Yotta. Jane talks about the intersection of ableism and racism against blackfellas, surviving and thriving after violent institutions, strength in culture and self-advocacy, and Jane's chapter in the highly acclaimed anthology, Growing Up Disabled in Australia. And then from 9:45 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. there's going to be The Mob Dreaming Up, Yarning Sick, Disabled Realities. And, of course, the program description is Disabled and Ill Mob Yarn on the Realities of Illness and Disability Within the Colony. And, yeah, I think that's probably all I actually have, I think, time for kind of now. But, yeah, I hope our listeners enjoy the rest of the special broadcast on Grounding Disability Justice, which will be going on for 12 hours from this morning, from 7 a.m. And, yeah, I'd like to thank all our listeners and our guests for being part of the program. And, yeah, stay tuned for what we have coming up next, which is going to be the Manifesto for Rest and Survival on Resistance and the Power Collective, an Indigenous Core to Disability Justice. All right.
Thanks for listening.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Kant. Away with all your superstitions. Serve all masses.
Arise.
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back. Reds underneath your beds and that...